Hello, advanced listeners. We're so glad that you have joined us today for our education article during the month of February. We have been exploring how ADHD has been affecting classrooms, affecting teachers, and affecting students. And we're looking at how this issue is becoming larger and larger and has increased in the United States. But also we've been discussing how that has a role to play in our classrooms here in Asia as well. Well, with me are two great panelists, and they decided to come back since we had such a great conversation yesterday. David and Pauline, thanks for coming back.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here. I'm just wondering if there's something you can share with us that you learned from yesterday or you remember from yesterday that you would just like to share with our advanced listeners.
Yeah, the article reminded us that there are actually 11% of American kids who have ADHD, which is around one every 10 kids. Mm-hmm. And that is a lot. And now it says it was doubled since 1970. So I think it would be nice if you can find a solution quickly.
Yes, I agree with you, David. Pauline, what about you?
I thought it was interesting to read about how kindergartens have changed so much. So from very young ages, really shifting from going from a very hands-on, interactive classroom where you're watching eggs hatch or you're making things, you're doing crafts, you're doing activities, to doing a lot more of just sitting down, filling out worksheets, and writing book reports. And to me, that kind of makes my heart hurt a little bit. I just think that there should be a more interactive, creative, energetic activities for young children. But I'm also glad that this is being recognized, that this information is being put out there so that the education community and parents and society as a whole can start wrestling with whether or not this is the best way to go about education at really young ages.
Right. Yeah. And yesterday, you know, we covered what the, you know, issues are that ADHD students need to deal with in the classroom. We talked about the different symptoms that they have when dealing with education, whether it's trouble paying attention. There was quite a few there. And then how they do struggle in the classroom. And like you said, how that has increased over time. And that sounded like a lot of bad news. Right. It didn't sound good at all. And we see that teachers are struggling to deal with that. Other students, the students themselves that have ADHD families. We were introduced to Hudson Dunn's mother. They are really having to deal with this struggle. So like David said, he hopes that there is a solution for this. While people have been exploring different options, I think one of the common options that has happened over time is medication. A lot of students have been given medication to calm their behavior within the classroom. But is that a good alternative? Some people disagree that we should use medication for that situation. Well, we are actually going to look at different treatments that have been used, in particular one called behavior modification. And we're going to have a look at how that's been working in the classroom and working with students with ADHD. So let's begin our first reading for today. If you open your advanced magazine to page 37, and if you have your electronic device, also turn to us there, and we will be starting our first reading called Treatment That Works in the first column.
Treatment That Works. Behavior therapy is on display in Herbert MacArthur, Jr.'s class. During the school year, he's a Miami-Dade High School teacher. In the summertime, he teaches a room full of younger students who have ADHD. He weaves between their desks, offering nonstop praise. "I like the way you're raising your hand without calling out," he tells one. "Thank you for using your materials appropriately," he says to another. It comes every 30 seconds or so, a pleasant reminder for every tiny thing done right. Because for MacArthur students, every moment spent sitting in class and following the rules is a monumental achievement.
Well, Well, listeners, thank you for joining us. We're exploring different treatments that are being used to address the issues that children with ADHD have in the classroom. And we start today in a paragraph that says, treatment that works. And where do we go in this first paragraph, Pauline?
So right off the bat, we get a specialized term. It's behavior therapy, and I'm just going to read you the definition. It says, in psychology, it's a form of treatment which targets and attempts to change a particular unwanted behavior rather than targeting and treating the cause of it. I think this is really great for this particular situation because, actually, Amanda and I were talking about this or have been throughout yesterday and today about, you know, we're not even necessarily sure that ADHD is a bad thing. Having lots of energy and enthusiasm for life, you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing. I don't know that I necessarily want people to treat that, to solve that energy. But we do need to find ways to help those students succeed in class, and there are particular behaviors that if we can help them find a way to succeed at it, it will really help them, right? So instead of going to that base part of the energy and active hyperactivity, instead of focusing on that, they're just focusing on the behaviors that are difficult for them because of that and saying, let's find a way to help you get there, consider, even though we know that it's going to be a little more difficult for you.
Right, right. And this is great that we see this on display in Herbert MacArthur Jr.'s class. When we say something is on display, we mean that you're able to see it in action. It's happening in this classroom, and the teacher's name is Herbert MacArthur Jr. And who is this man, David?
This man is a teacher during school year. He teaches the junior class, but also during summertime, he teaches a room full of younger students who have ADHD.
You know, I was really impressed with this because yesterday, Pauline, you shared how teachers don't go into the teaching profession for the salary, because the salary is not very good in America, but rather they go into teaching because they love to teach and they love to maybe inspire students and help educate them. And here, you know, summertime is that time where teachers get to take a break. They get to have a vacation. But he is willing to give up his summertime to teach these students. And wow, that already, wow, you know, that's so generous of him to do that. Now, what does he do in the classroom?
I love this. It says it's non-stop praise, so constant praise. And I think that's so important because, like we talked about yesterday, kids who are struggling with ADHD are getting a lot of negative response back, both from teachers and from peers, seeing all of their behaviors as really frustrating, demanding, you know, distracting. So they're getting a lot of input that's saying that can, for a kid, just come down to hearing, I'm bad, right? You're bad. And so the fact that all summer long they have a teacher who's just constantly praising them for every little step they're able to take in the right direction, I think it's just beautiful and really acknowledging, as it says here, that it's a monumental achievement for them just to raise their hand without also yelling out at the same time or jumping up and down, right?
Like, right.
Where in a regular classroom, we're not going to, you probably aren't going to get praised for that because we think that's just the base level expectation. But in this classroom, they understand that all of those little pieces of just general classroom behavior are really difficult. They don't come easily, and they really do deserve praise when they happen.
I think it's so interesting that, you know, he has come up with a way to do this. Just every 30 seconds, he's able to give them a praise about something that they're doing and just how they respond to it. You know, they respond to that positive affirmation so well. And I think that's something that we can all learn. You know, positive affirmation really does change everybody's behavior. You know, when somebody affirms us in a positive way, we feel better, you know, we feel acknowledged. And so for the same, like you were saying yesterday, if you're labeled as a bad child, you've got a lot of negative words in your head, you know, and they're dealing with it. Oh, really? Am I really like that? You know, is that who I really am? No, they're actually very unique. And rather than quenching that with bad words that we say to them, you know, this teacher, Herbert, he is acknowledging the achievements that they're doing in little ways.
Yeah, which really is a great thing that he's doing. And as teachers, I can appreciate why it's difficult to do this in a normal classroom, because the distracting, frustrating behaviors, those are obvious, right? So you notice those right away. Mm-hmm. And even if you're trying to be gracious about it, you're noticing a negative behavior, right? Mm-hmm. But the little moments when they're not being distracting and, you know, frustrating, it's you don't notice that as much, right? You don't notice the absence of things as much as you notice the presence, right? So you notice the presence of distraction, and you notice when the student is being a bother, frankly. Mm. But you probably are less likely to notice when they aren't doing that, when they are, the moment that they are sitting quietly. I know in the school that I worked at, they always said, try and catch them being good. So try and actively be almost playing a game with yourself to try and find the moment, not when they're misbehaving, but find that moment when they're behaving and immediately start throwing on praise. But that takes a lot of effort and work from the teacher's part. So I understand why that doesn't come naturally.
Well, let's go into our next reading today to explore more about how this behavior modification is working in the classroom.
Implementing behavior modification strategies in the classroom takes time. Time that teachers don't often feel like they have. Every moment spent fixing bad behavior, praising good behavior, or redirecting a student to the task at hand is a moment of teaching that is lost. World-renowned ADHD researcher Dr. William Pelham and his team focus on behavior modification because, he says, it works. Combined with parent training, Pelham has found that starting with behavior-based treatment rather than medication is more effective and costs less. His findings led the CDC to change the recommended course of treatment for children with ADHD.
Well, listeners, we are exploring how behavior modification strategies are working with ADHD students and helping them see just behavior in the classroom change and how positive affirmation is working with these students. We've been introduced to Herbert MacArthur Jr. We've been introduced to his classroom, and then summertime he works with ADHD students. He uses nonstop praise to help them with their behavior, as he believes that when they are doing something good, it really is a monumental achievement. What we are seeing is the implementation of behavioral modification strategies in the classroom, but it does take time. And Pauline, you shared before this reading how that can be quite difficult for the teachers, right? Which is what they go on to say here. Time that teachers don't often feel like they have. Because in the first day, we talked about standardized tests. You're trying to reach a certain academic expectation to be able to pass these standardized tests. And any distraction from that can make you feel you're going off course as a teacher. So to spend time with a student in the classroom may be seen as difficult, right? But you were sharing just how the school that you worked at dealt with these situations.
Well, I was really lucky because I worked in a school that was specifically created for kids who had had such a rough time in regular schools that they were sent to a special school to help them succeed. Mm. And as a result, the supervisors that we had, our administration, was really supportive and consistently pushing us to hear the message that our number one priority was to care for the emotional, psychological, and behavioral needs of our students, and that academics came second after that. That, you know, it didn't matter how well they could do math or how well they could even read if emotionally, socially, they weren't able to function in the world. Mm-hmm. And so there was a very clear teaching that we want you to take all the time you need in your classroom to help these kids learn how to interact socially, to learn how to just care for one another, to have empathy, to learn how to be polite and pay attention, and just all those basic building blocks to both succeeding in class and just succeeding in life in general. But, you know, frankly, most teachers don't have that kind of administration and school set up where that is clearly being communicated. Frankly, most of the time it's the opposite.
Right. Well, we see in Herbert's MacArthur Jr.'s class, every moment spent fixing bad behavior, praising good behavior, or redirecting a student to the task at hand is a moment of teaching that is lost. And I think that's what we were talking about during the reading, that it's not just the academic knowledge that you as a teacher get to impart to students, but you also have these other teaching moments that you get to impart to them as well. But like you said, because of the way we need the expectations academics have on students, teachers also have a lot of demands to meet those expectations. Now we're introduced to a world-renowned ADHD researcher, Dr. William Pelham. And what do him and his team do, David?
Right, so Dr. William Pelham and his team, they focus on behavior modification, and he says this works. So this modification, this method, he combines it with parent training. And I think it's very interesting because, Amanda, you were talking about in Asia, many parents don't want to accept that their children have this disease. And so maybe if they accept it more and are willing to help, you know, with the modification, with help at, with the training, then things might change.
I will say, I think my general impression is that Asian parents are very involved in their children's life and care a lot. Not that I think there are many American parents who care a lot as well, but I just see even a greater degree of involvement in Asia. So I think there's a great hope that if students here are struggling with this, that you would maybe have a higher rate of parents really being on board with getting training to help their students, because I definitely see that it seems like parents here are really all about trying to give their children everything they can to succeed.
Yeah, I've seen in the 12 years that I've been here, it's changed so much. You know, parents are becoming a lot more informed. They're learning a lot, and they're wanting to be involved in their child's education a lot more. They're becoming a lot more informed. They're learning a lot more, whether that's online or through books that they're reading. I have really seen a shift happen in Asia. And I just hope that continues. Maybe we can learn about this behavior modification strategy. How can we use that here? I think it's already happening around in different places as well. And so we hope we can inspire people as well just to think of a different option, or just to think of what's happening around the world right now in dealing with ADHD. Now we see that Pelham has found that starting with behavior-based treatment rather than medication is more effective and costs less. And I know in my family, when a person had ADHD, it was dealt with through medication. That's going back even 20 years ago. So I think that a lot has happened. A lot has changed. People are realizing medication is not necessarily the only way to deal with ADHD. We're also looking at how can we use behavior modification to deal with the situation. And he found that it works. So it says his findings led the CDC to change the recommended course of treatment for children with ADHD. And that's huge in America.
It is huge to have a reversal in, or not a complete reversal, but to be able to change what the recommendations are is a pretty big deal. But I think it's great. Just like any medical field, I think most doctors would say, if there is a non-medication route to, you know, to greater health, to, you know, lowering high blood pressure or reducing obesity, you know, they always want to push the non-medication route, because ultimately those natural routes are always going to be our number one first preference.
Right.
But just like high blood pressure or obesity, there are times for medication to come in and be a support, although hopefully it's not the only thing that's being done, right? And I think that needs to be heard with ADHD as well, that it shouldn't just be, here's medication, end of story, that there should be more involved in that process.
Well, let's go on to our last reading for today to explore medication over therapy. Let's find out more.
medicine over therapy. Still, children in Florida are far more likely to receive medicine over therapy. The problem is that there is no pharmaceutical company for better classroom management practices. There is no pharmaceutical company for better parenting programs. So you don't have gigantic industries helping parents and helping teachers, Pelham said. Ava Goldman, a director for Miami-Dade's Exceptional Student Education, said the school district works with Pelham to train teachers to work with students who have ADHD. The district and Pelham also recently collaborated to revamp the accepted classroom accommodations students with ADHD can receive.
Well, advanced listeners, we are exploring ADHD in the classroom, and this commonly diagnosed disorder has been creating a struggle for teachers and students. But we have found throughout our article, as we have journeyed from yesterday to today, that there are different ways to deal with it. We met Herbert MacArthur Jr. He has been using behavior modification strategies in his classroom, and we've heard from Dr. William Pelham and his team how they have found that behavior modification strategies work, and they have even been able to have a shift happen within the Centers for Disease Control in the way that ADHD is treated in children. They've been able to bring behavior modification strategies as a course of treatment for children with ADHD, as opposed to just medicating them. Well, let's have a look at what is happening in Florida. Pauline.
So it says, even though behavior modification, as we've heard, has had such good results, it's still far more likely in Florida, and I'm sure in many parts of the United States, to receive medication over therapy.
Hmm.
And, you know, it goes on to say the problem is, so they think maybe one of the reasons is because there are no pharmaceutical companies for better classroom management practices. I love this. So pharmaceutical company are companies that they're connected with making medicine, and they make a lot of money by creating and selling medicine. So, of course, they can pour all this money into creating, hopefully, the best medicine for students with ADHD because they're going to get a lot of money back from those that buy it. But there's not that money in teaching parents and classes how to provide better behavioral management solutions in the classroom and at home. So you don't have these gigantic industries, these huge companies getting involved in helping teachers. So it's a slower, harder process.
Right. There's no incentive for these companies, as far as money goes, to get involved in better classroom management or helping parents with strategies to deal with ADHD. Well, this can be a problem as to why a lot of states in America don't look at behavioral modification strategies as opposed to medicating students. So we learn that from Ava Goldman. She's a director at this Miami-Dade school, which is where Herbert MacArthur comes from. She says that the school district itself works with Dr. Jeffrey Pelham in training teachers to work with students who have ADHD. So this school district has decided that they want to try behavior modification strategies as opposed to medication. So they have been collaborating together to revamp. And revamp means to change and arrange it differently, to accept classroom accommodation students with ADHD. So basically, there are classrooms that can have students with ADHD in them.
Yeah, I think this is great. The more education and support that both teachers and parents can have with this, I think the better. Both for the individual student and for the classroom. I think it's always a positive thing when we can teach other students who don't have the same struggles to have compassion for those who do and understanding. And all of these behavioral techniques are going to be great in a classroom anyway. Giving students in general more praise when they do things right is just a good practice anyways. So lots of these practices are going to help all of the students, and in particular those parents and students who are really, you know, overwhelmed and hurting over this struggle of ADHD and how difficult it makes it for them to succeed in class, I'm glad to hear that there's some movement towards understanding and education.
Now, Pauline, you shared with us in the break a story within your own family that may inspire our listeners today.
So I'm sure you heard that I'm very passionate about this issue. I usually am passionate about special education in the States. I care about it a lot. Mm. But this one touches my family pretty personally because my brother, we're pretty sure, almost pretty much positive, that he would have been labeled ADHD had my parents desired to go and get him a diagnosis. But my parents were really involved in, you know, his education. Actually, my family, we were homeschooled until fifth grade. So a lot of that rigorous, you know, education that we've been talking about in kindergarten didn't have to be as rigorous because there was more flexibility to give breaks as needed, to do, you know, interactive classroom learning while still making sure that we were, you know, making the progress that we needed in order to be in line with public schools and with our development. But my brother never received any kind of diagnosis. He did go into public school in fifth grade, and he did okay. He wasn't an exceptional student, but he wasn't terrible. But it was not the easiest because he did have a lot of high energy. But then in high school, he happened to get asked to be in a dance for a choreographed dance for a school musical. Actually, both he and I were invited into it. I had fun. I didn't find my life passion. I had fun. My brother did find his life passion. And I really believe that if he had been medicated and had just this calmed down state, I don't know that he would have discovered this love that he has for this, because it's all about the energy and excitement and enthusiasm and creativity that made him love dance came from that ADHD place. And he's still a professional dancer today. That's what he does as a career. So, you know, just for those of you teachers and parents who have ADHD students, I do plead with you not to see these students as bad kids. These are different kids who might have some beautiful talents to offer in life.
Thank you for sharing that, Pauline. I hope that inspires our listeners. Now, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today, but we would love to hear your feedback. Make sure you write into us with how you've learned from today's lesson or in your own life when dealing with ADHD. I want to thank my panelists, Pauline and David, for joining me today. But for now, we say goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.